Is the learning in your school competency-based? Is it personalized? Is it happening anytime, anywhere? Is it student-owned? In other words, is the learning student-centered? And are all students learning more deeply, more equitably, and becoming career and college ready? If you have these questions, want to know what the research says about them, and are trying to figure out how to implement these ideas in your classrooms and schools, you've come to the right place. Thank you for listening to the Student-Centered Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Barriff, and I've been a principal and teacher in student-centered schools for over 17 years, and I can't wait to share a story or interview that will help you help your students. I'm here today speaking with Mary Bellavance, who's one of the students at the Center Distinguished Fellows, also an instructional coach at Biddeford School Department in Southern Maine, and a veteran classroom teacher and co-president of Maine ASCD. It's an honor to have you on the podcast. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, Arthur.
And we're going to talk about a really important topic for teachers, which is how do you create an environment and a culture that supports student-centered learning? And let's start with the environment. Let's go back to what we see as a traditional classroom and all of the chairs and desks in rows facing the teacher. Now, that's not going to work in a student-centered learning classroom, right?
Exactly. So that's one of the first things we work with teachers when we hire teachers, to think about their classroom spaces and how they can organize them so they are conducive to student-centered learning. So we take some time where they actually have a day in the summer to work with a mentor and to look at the environment, look at the furniture, think about how are we going to cluster the desks, or do we have a gathering space or a meeting space where everybody can come together for circle time or for a workshop, mini lesson. And it's taking that time in the beginning of the year is really crucial to laying the groundwork for the student-centered learning, because if we want our kids to feel safe and take risks in the classroom, then they have to feel that they own that environment. And so having that conversation ahead of time really helps the teacher with the planning. But then it's also important when the kids get there that they also are part of that design and have some ownership in how the classroom is set up, where they keep materials that they're going to need for writer's workshop, or where's their classroom library, and making sure they have a part in organizing the books and getting that set up. So the more that you can have the kids be part of that process early on is really going to lay the foundation for the learning opportunities that you're going to build on throughout the year.
So once students and teachers have had time to design the room, they feel more ownership over the room, the teacher has amazing projects and instructional strategies ready, what else is needed to develop the culture of a classroom to make it conducive to student-centered learning?
We spend a lot of time at the beginning of the year working through that process with our students. And again, new teacher training, we take the staff through a process where all students are involved in creating a shared vision for their classroom. So for example, we might use the affinity diagram process where we ask a guiding question such as, what does a successful learner look like in our classroom? And give children an opportunity to sort of think on their own, do some brainstorming, and then gather all that information. And in small groups, they work to sort the information and think about commonalities and what are some similar threads of information. And once they've grouped their ideas, we chart them all and we have a big list, and we have the kids do some type of voting. They like to do power voting, where they get so many sticky dots to vote for what they feel is most important for being a successful learner. And then from that, when they come up with whatever, usually three common components, such as in our classroom, we are ready, responsible, and hardworking. And from that shared vision, then the part of the process on a different day would be to really take the time to unpack each of those components and have the children think about what does being responsible look like and sound like and feel like in our classroom. And through their conversations, we come up with some I can statements that everybody in the class can agree to, and those I can statements become our code of cooperation. And once we have that, that code will help guide us throughout the year so we can reach our shared vision. And it's something that we spend a lot of time at the beginning of the year, but we also find that it's something that needs to be revisited often. And having conversations when maybe something isn't going right, and somebody's doing something that that isn't part of the I can. So bringing it back to the group and having conversations around that, and doing whatever we can to sort of bring the shared vision and the code to life. Sometimes I've seen teachers and their children create songs or chants around their shared vision. Lots of opportunities for goal setting and reflection on how they're doing towards being a responsible learner or being respectful learner. So we get that process going early on, but it needs to continually be revisited for it to be successful.
You know, I think a lot of teachers have made the shift from handing out a list of classroom rules to having the students generate those rules. But what I really like about the process you just described is the deliberative, slow unpacking of each characteristic of a successful learner and how it's building students' collaborative skills and critical thinking skills while deepening their understanding of the concepts and really setting them up for success just by doing that, by having them reflect and think about what it means for them to be successful. And you're creating a common language and that common vision like you described that can be really foundational in how the teacher addresses classroom behavior and learning throughout the year. So I think that's really excellent. Are there other techniques or strategies that you use with teachers or that as a part of your training with teachers?
Once we have the shared vision and the code of cooperation for general classroom actions, if you will, once we get more into the school year, we have the children think about what does a responsible learner look like when I'm working individually, so when I'm working all by myself, what does that look like? And what does a responsible learner look like, sound like, feel like when I'm working in a group with peers? And we know that there are some different skills needed for both situations. And again, I think it's important to make the time to invest in those conversations and really have them think deeply about, when I'm working by myself, this is what I need to do to focus and stay on task as a responsible learner. But then when I'm working with my peers in a group project, then I also need to think about, okay, part of being responsible is doing some listening and turn taking and some of those important cooperation and collaborative skills that we're building on. So we can keep building on this idea of involving the children in the process of this really creating a culture of learning. And so in all aspects of their day, it's about their learning, but they have a voice in their learning.
They have a voice and they're developing agency and position in the classroom that is more active and less passive. And you're also helping them develop metacognition of themselves and how they learn and what it's going to take for them to employ strategies to find success in various contexts. So Mary, I can imagine that some teachers think that this is great, but they have a lot of content to get through and this is an investment of time. And is it really worth it? What would you say to them?
Yes, I've actually lived that because I started teaching at the elementary level where this is pretty commonplace, and responsive classroom initiatives have been part of classrooms for many years. And now I'm working at secondary level. I'm at the middle school, and we had to have those conversations around the, you know, try it, try investing the time and see what happens. Because, you know, time is of the essence, and our teachers have so much content to get through, but they gave it a chance, and the results were really, really good, and they could see the impact that investing the time early on really supported the learning down the road. Because if they really want their students in their classroom to be making some choices about their learning and becoming more self-directed learners, you really have to have, you know, some parameters in the classroom, and you really have to have the kids own that environment. And so for us, once they tried it and they saw how it worked, and the teachers could really get behind it. And now that's 3 years in, that's something that we invest a good amount of time every year in the fall.
It's so true in education that you have to go slow to go fast. So I think this is a great thing for our teachers to be thinking of this summer as they're developing their vision for their next school year. Mary, if folks do want to learn more about this, how can they get in touch with you?
Sure. Email me at mbellavance@biddefordschooldepartment.org.
That's mbellavance. So thank you, Mary, so much for being on the podcast to get that conversation started.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again for listening to the Student Centered Learning Podcast. Let us know what you think about this episode or what you tried in your school by commenting on our Facebook page. You can also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, and please leave a rating so others can find us. You can also follow us on Twitter @STUCNTR Podcast. And remember, students learn deeply.